Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Crime Hour. Today, we are taking a trip to California, where I will be covering the case of Ed Kemper III. Edmund Kemper, who was born December 18, 1948, who usually went by Ed, was born in Burbank, California, and he had an older and younger sister, which left him to be the middle child. Ed's father, Edmund Kemper II, was a World War II veteran, and he would describe his marriage to his wife, Clarnell, as loveless and damaging. His father would say that suicide missions in wartime and the later atomic bomb testings were nothing compared to living with Clarnell. Okay. First off, I just want to say, that's really bad. Imagine, like, your significant other described your relationship like that. Like, that's a red flag right there. You need to get the fuck out of that relationship, if that's how you feel. Clarnell was not a nice lady. She was verbally abusive towards her husband and would make him feel like crap about his job. From what I read, I think he became an engineer after being... like, from the war and everything. Nothing was ever good enough for her. And she would refuse to coddle Ed because she feared that doing so would make him gay. I don't know where she got that idea, but that's not true. And also, what a shitty mom and a shitty wife. And I bet she's the type of woman who's gonna sit at home, sit on the couch, and be like, I wonder what time this guy's gonna come home from work, so I could give him shit about his work. At a young age, Ed starts having dark fantasies relating to sexuality and death. He would decapitate his sister's dolls, and in the second grade, he actually ended up stalking his teacher all the way to her house, and he would just be outside her house, like outside the window, watching her while carrying his father's bayonet, which I don't know how you're able to just leave the house with that in your bag or whatever. Like, do parents not check what is in their children's bag when they go to school? Because what the fuck? Imagine going to second grade and being like, okay guys, it's time for show and tell, and you pull out the bayonet. Hello? In 1957, his parents ended up getting a divorce and his father leaves. This took a huge toll on Ed and it made it very difficult for him because he actually adored his father and he hated his mother. She was an alcoholic, emotionally and physically abusive person towards Ed and only Ed. Like, his sisters would not take any damage at all. It was just him. Clarnell actually stated that by the time Ed was 15, she was actually really scared of him because he was 15 years old and he was 6'4". And because of his very, very large figure, like he was just really tall, she would make him sleep in the basement and lock him up. Like, she would actually lock him in there because she was scared that he would actually hurt his sisters. Which made Ed feel really shitty because he's like, what the fuck, everybody gets to be upstairs and I'm locked down here by myself at the age of 15. On the regular, his mom would actually insult him, abuse him, constantly telling him that he's never going to be anything in life. And she emphasized every day that no woman would ever love him. So he grew up actually really, really hating his mother. Which is like, what a shitty thing to do. Like, imagine, like, growing up, she never coddled him. Like, she never showed him any affection because she was scared that it would turn him gay. And so she would just say these things to him. Like, imagine all these kids are, like, going to school, getting dropped off, and their parents are like, oh... Love you, see you later, you know, like, have a good day. And his mom's just like, no, fuck you, see ya. When he was home, he would actually play with his sisters, and he would play this game that he made up called Gas Chamber. And in this game, he would actually blindfold his sisters and tie them up to a chair with a cord and pretend to be in agony until they died. I don't know what kind of game they're playing, but, like, what in the actual fuck? Because I remember as a kid, like, I'd play with my Hot Wheels and, you know, go to the park or go on a bike ride. Or, like, even pretend play would be, like, playing in, like, a toy kitchen or, you know, playing quote-unquote family or what, something like that. Like, what the fuck? This kid's like, okay, let's make up our own game. We're just gonna call it Gas Chamber. Like, what? The family also had a huge rug, and the kids would actually take turns wrapping each other up, and they had to try and get out of this without any help. And it was one of Ed's favorite games because he loved watching his sister struggle. At the age of 9, Ed would say that he went to a magic show and that happened at a comic book store, and the magician was doing a trick with the wooden decapitation board thing, you know, like back in the day when they, like, that's how you killed, you know what I mean, right? That board you stick your head in and your arms as, like, a torture device. Well, anyways, the magician asked for an audience member to volunteer, and Ed got very excited because he actually thought it was going to happen, and he got so excited to see that a magician was going to chop somebody's head off, which is very fucked up. Like, I know, like, you know, magic tricks and stuff, like, it gets kids, like, intrigued, but, like, I've never seen a magic trick where it did that. I just remember, like, the whole, like, splitting the body up in half kind of that one. But yeah, anyways, he got very interested, and he was like, holy shit, I'm gonna witness somebody get decapitated. At 10 years old, Ed took the house cat and buried it alive in the backyard. At 13, he used a knife and killed a wild cat and also buried it in the backyard beside his house cat, and his mother found it. And as we know, serial killers, you know, one of their biggest red flags is killing animals. So the fact that he started off doing that, burying it alive, is a big red flag. Oh, plus the fact that he was very, very intrigued about decapitation. At the age of 14, he ran away from home and he went searching for his father so he could live with him. His father was living in this place called Van Nuys, California. Well, I don't even know why I'm saying that right. Anyways, Ed stayed with his dad for a little while, but he had to be removed from the home because apparently he was causing too much stress to his stepmom. I don't know. And she complained that he caused her stress and it caused her to have migraines, so he had to move. So his father sends his son, sends Edmund to go live with his grandparents in North Fork, California. Ed moves in with them and says his grandma was very similar to his own mother, and like his mother, his grandma was emotionally and verbally abusive towards him, and so he disliked her a lot. So where his grandparents live is, it's on a farm, okay? They own a farm. And so his grandfather gave him a .22 caliber rifle to shoot and kill rabbits and gophers with, but he ends up shooting birds and other type of animals, and this concerned his grandma so much. She was like, he's enjoying this a little too much. I'm going to take that away from him. And because she was so scared, they had a handgun in the house, and she would hide that because she was like, I don't know, what if he decides to take that and just randomly start shooting? Which, honestly, I would have felt the same way. I would have been like, what the fuck? You don't just randomly start shooting random stuff, right? Like, I get it, it was a gift, and, like, they're on a farm or whatever. But, like, he was literally, like, anything that came through his path, he's like, he would just shoot them. So, yeah, I understand that part of the grandma being concerned. So the grandfather actually reassured her and was like, no, no, it's fine. He's young. That's how he's going to learn to be, like, a good hunter or whatever. August 27th, 1964, Ed had a lot of rage built up, and he was with his grandmother in the kitchen, and the two got into a very, very heated argument. So Ed grabs the handgun that was in the house, and he gets behind his grandma, who's sitting at the table, and shoots her in the head 3 times. At the time, his grandfather was out. So when his grandfather came back, and he was in the driveway, Ed thought to himself, I should probably kill him too, because, like, what am I gonna say to him, right? Like, he's gonna come home into this mess. So he goes outside and he shoots him while he's still in the driveway. Ed claims that the only reason why he did it was because he wanted to protect his grandfather from having to see his wife dead in the house. And he didn't want him to suffer a possible heart attack because his grandfather was already suffering from a lot of, like, heart problems and, like, other medical issues. So he was like, I'm just gonna, like, kill him because I already killed her, so he doesn't have to suffer through all of this. Honestly, Ed's not thinking straight. That's not a good idea. Don't do that when you get in a heated argument. And, like, at the time, like I said, he thought that that was his way of protecting his grandfather from seeing this whole mess. So after this, he doesn't know what to do with himself, so he calls his mother and tells her what happened, and she tells him, you better call the police and turn yourself in, or I will call them for you and turn you in, because what in the fuck, why are you calling me and telling me this? I don't want to be a part of it. So he did just that. He would call the police and he would say to them, like, I shot my grandparents. And so they come and they take him in for questioning. And when they asked him why he did it, his only answer was to see what it felt like to kill somebody. Dude, you didn't just kill one person, you killed 2 people, and they were your family. Like, what in the actual fuck? So he was then handed over to the California Youth Authority. There he met with different psychiatrists, because they're like, okay, maybe this guy's really fucked up in the head. And so he had to have a mental illness check. And so they gave him an IQ test also, and he scored a 136, which is a genius level. And then he took the test again a couple weeks later, and he scored a 140. And his mental illness check came back, and he was diagnosed with paranoid and psychotic. Like, okay, if this is not a red flag to you, I don't know what is. So he was then sent to a maximum security facility for the mentally ill convicts. Yeah, you sit your ass there. Okay, he should be locked up there for good. 1969, he was released. What the fuck, why? So he was in this facility for 5 years and was released because of good behavior. Well, maybe you should reassess that. Like, I feel like just because somebody acts good in your facility because they're following your routine and your rules does not mean they should be let out. But what the fuck do I know? So his juvenile criminal record was expunged, which means that it was wiped. He had a clear state, you know. So doctors told him it's best that he didn't go and live with his mother. But because he didn't have anywhere else to go, he had to move in with his mother in Santa Cruz, California. Also, when he was released, he was actually considered low risk to ever doing that crime again, which, I don't know where you even stand at that point thinking, oh yeah, he'll never do it again. I mean, he just killed 2 people. What? What? So eventually he would actually go and live on his own, and he would just live random areas of California. Like, he would go back and forth, and when he actually went broke, he would just move back in with his mother, and when he got money again, he would move back out. So it was just like this repeated cycle. He went to a community college for a short time and worked various jobs. He finally got a full-time employment job with the Department of Transportation in 1971. Although he really wanted to be a police officer or state trooper, and they only rejected him, not because of his past, because remember, that was wiped clear, but because at the time, he got rejected because he reached the maximum height requirement. He was 6'9 and 300 pounds. Yeah, he was like in his early 20s and 6'9. Like, what? And also, I didn't know that they had requirement, like maximum requirement height or whatever, to be a police officer. Like, I thought you could, it didn't matter about your height as long as you can do the job, but I guess that's not it with them. I guess they're like, no, you're too tall. Can't get this job, honey. Move on. But he actually became really good friends with some of the officers and state troopers because they would all hang out at the same bar and they called him Big Ed. Ed ends up buying a motorcycle, but he gets into a really bad accident and received a big chunk of money from the other driver because it was their fault. And with this money, he bought a car that resembled a police car because he wanted to be a police officer that bad. And at this time, instead of looking for a new job due to his injuries, he actually noticed a large number of women hitchhiking in this certain area of California. So he starts picking up these women, finding different techniques to do so that, you know, to make them, like, comfortable with him, make him seem more trustworthy, and he would just be more approachable. So he picks up these two ladies and drives them to where they need to go and then let them out of the car and leave, right? But then he offered a ride to two Fresno State students, Mary Ann and Anita. And they were just trying to get home from school. Unfortunately, they didn't make it. The families of Mary Ann and Anita had reported them missing, and on August 15th, in a wooded area of Santa Cruz, a woman's head was found, which later was ID'd, or like, I guess like, tested. Like, the DNA was tested, and it was actually Mary Ann. So Anita's remains were never found. Oh, Big Ed, what did you do? He actually later would admit to stabbing and killing Anita and try to strangle Mary, but it didn't work, so he stabbed and cut her throat. And he would bring their bodies back to his apartment and remove their heads and hands. Also engage in sexual activity with their corpse. Later that same year, September 14th, 1972, Ed picks up 15-year-old Aiko, and she caught on to his scheme and tried to escape. Ed taped her mouth shut and tried to suffocate her by putting his fingers into her nostrils, but realized it wasn't working, so he ends up taking a scarf that she was wearing and strangle her, and then raped her. He then places her body in the trunk of his car and heads to the bar and hang out with his police friends, which is really fucked up. Imagine, like, the whole time you're thinking this person's your friend, you're just hanging out with them at the bar with all of your coworkers. Meanwhile, he has this dead girl in the back of his trunk. So after this hangout, he actually brings the body back to his house and starts to dismember her. And his fascination of taking off their heads and their hands was actually from that magic trick from when he was little. Which is, like I said, he was very interested in that, and he wanted to see it so bad that he made it happen himself, which is really fucked up. So he actually keeps her head and her hands in a bag in his car and went to a court-appointed meeting about his, like, psychiatric issues. And after this meeting, he disposed the head and hands in separate locations. January 1973, Ed continued to act on these murders and picked up another woman named Cindy. He ends up shooting and killing her while his mother was out. He took Cindy's body and hid it in his room. He then dismembered her the same way that he would do with everyone else that he has captured and murdered. And the next day, he actually threw the pieces of her body into the ocean. Then he actually goes and buries the head in his mother's backyard, making it, like, face up and, like, basically look up to his mother's window. And the reason why he did that was he said his mother always wanted people to look up to her. So his mother wanted somebody to look up to her as a role model. And here this guy is like, oh, you want somebody to look up to you? Well, here. Right? And like, that's what he did, which is really creepy. Imagine waking up, looking out your window and just seeing that, like, no, thank you. And I feel like at this point, if his mother actually saw that, she should have reported him and, like, you know, got him arrested and sent him back to where the fuck he was staying. Because clearly he is not okay. February 5th, 1973, Ed and his mother got into a fight, and he was so filled with rage and, like, ready to kill because, remember, he hated her so much. So he gets into his car, takes his mother's parking sticker for her workplace at a college, and he spots two students, Rosalind and Alice, and picks them up. And now normally he would actually pull over and kill whoever was actually in the car with him, but this time he actually kept driving and he didn't stop. And then he turns to Alice, who's sitting in the backseat, and just shoots her several times. Then shoots Rosalind point blank. Okay, so this guy is just, like, no remorse, savage as hell. He was just like, fuck this shit. I already got them in the car. I already know what I'm gonna do. I'm just gonna shoot them and kill them. Like, why make them suffer some more, right? He just literally just went and did it. He then actually pulls into, like, he puts the girls' bodies into the trunk of the car, decapitated them, and dismembers their bodies. And this time he even removes the bullets from their heads. And he did all this when he pulled over into a cul-de-sac. Also, for those of you who don't know what a cul-de-sac is, it's basically a dead-end road. And he actually took the time to remove the bullets from their heads. And then he disposes the body in different locations. And then sometime in March, some people were hiking on Highway 1 in San Mateo County and came across heads. They called the police, and at the time, two serial killers, John Fraser and Herbert Mullins, were actually, like, one of the top two serial killers for that time. So police automatically thought, okay, this has to be their work, because they actually were the two serial killers working around that area of San Mateo County and stuff. And because of this whole, like, two serial killers not knowing that Ed Kemper was one of them, being the third, they were like, Santa Cruz, California actually was given the name the murder capital of the world because of it. Because they were like, holy shit, we have two serial killers on the loose, we don't have a lead on them, and now that's what everyone's gonna think about Santa Cruz. Honestly, Ed Kemper really just was like, holy shit, I saw a magic trick and I'm just gonna reenact it into real life because it didn't happen in magic. Like, it's fake, right? It's only for show for children. So they're like, so he basically was like, I don't want that fake shit. I want to make it real. And that's how fucked up he was. April 1973, Ed would commit two more murders, and these would be the last murders that he would commit. On Good Friday, Ed went to his mother's house, and the two got into a heated argument. His mother decided to go to sleep, like, kind of like sleep it off, like, I don't want to argue with you. And while she was asleep, he beat her to death with a claw hammer and dismembered her and removed her head and raped her head several times. And then he forced the head to have oral sex with him. Ew. First off, that's your mother. Second of all, what the fuck? You killed her and now you're gonna, oh my god. And nasty. Disgusting. He then, like, takes the head, places it on the fireplace mantle, and uses it as a dartboard. He cuts out her tongue and voice box and tosses it into the garbage disposal, but this garbage disposal that he had would not take it. It kept spitting it back up. And he was, like, so irritated by it. He was like, what the fuck, man? So then he gets so annoyed that he was like, fuck this shit. Forget about it. He decided to call up his mom's best friend, Sally, and invites her over for dinner. And she thought nothing of it because she's like, oh, it's Easter weekend. You know, like, I'm just going to come over. First off, that's a very big red flag. Why would the son of your best friend be calling you instead of your best friend herself? You know what I mean? Like, I'd be very concerned if, you know, like, my friend's kid was to call me, right? Like, I'd be like, where's your mother? Why are you calling me, you know? Once Sally arrived at the house, Ed strangled her, and when she died, he hid her body in the closet. He then had sex with her body later that night, and the next day, he fled the area in Sally's car and went to a place where he can rent a new car, and he just switched it out for a brand new car. And then he drove 18 hours, stopping only for gas and soda, and he drove until he got to Colorado. Wow, okay. First off, I didn't know you can just go to these car rental places and just switch it out. Like, wouldn't you need ID and be like, oh, why do you need a different car? This, and like, if you run the plates, wouldn't it show you that it doesn't even belong to him, right? Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But then again, back then, I don't know how things worked. April 23rd, Ed made a call to Santa Cruz police to confess his crimes. At first, they didn't believe him because they're like, what do you mean? You're Big Ed. You're our man, right? Like, you're our boy. You're just trying to trick us, you know? Like, you're playing a prank on us. But then afterwards, they took him in, and when Ed showed them all the evidence and locations to prove that he was this killer, they were like, shook. They were like, what the fuck? We've been hanging out with the serial killer this whole time. Ed ended up confessing to 8 murders and was arrested April 1973 at the age of 24. He was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder and went on trial for his crimes in October 1973. He was found guilty of all charges in November of 8 concurrent life sentences with no parole. And actually, in 2017, he did go up for parole because I guess, like, things change. I don't know. Like, things have changed and, you know, good behavior. So he went up. He actually went 2017 up for parole and he was denied. So Ed is going to sit the rest of his life in prison because he is a piece of shit who took a magic trick way too far. Yeah, that is the case of Ed Kemper III. And until next time, bye!